Hey, everybody. Welcome back to One Club Short Podcast. We are past our last major of the season. Looking forward to the FedEx Cup and the Ryder Cup. But kind of as we talked about last week, it feels like the golf season is somewhat over to a certain degree. You know, there's some fun stuff coming up, but not, you know, to not have a major anywhere from August through the rest of our golf season is kind of crazy. So we'll touch base on that a little bit. We're going to touch base on our upcoming event in Edgewood Country Club in New Jersey on Monday the 31st. We've got a little bit of a cheating scandal going on in the world of golf. We'll talk about that and kind of how we handle those kind of things, what we think should be the repercussions. And then just about the major itself. Did we feel like it lived up to the hype? Was it truly a major? Was it, was it disappointing or exciting? So, I know we talked about this a little bit before the podcast even started. And I think all of us are in the same boat. It's just to what degree. But I don't know. And we got to give Glenn crazy props for calling out the winner. Yes, he didn't make it to the podcast. And he sent us the text at 3 o'clock on a Sunday afternoon. But other than that, he totally called the winner of the British Open. So Glenn, kind of congrats, I guess, you weirdo. But
7:43 on Wednesday evening, we were recording the podcast, which is why I missed the text from Glenn. But he said he wanted to get it on the record that Brian Harman would be champion golfer of the year. He did misspell Harman's last name, so he might have been talking about a different guy. I think we have to acknowledge that possibility, but really, really impressive pick by you, Glenn.
It was actually Butch Harmon, teacher of the year. I just sort of misspelled it. That was my pick.
Well, that's a good pick, too.
Yeah. I like that kid. I don't know why, you know, it's sort of like pattern recognition. I think he has been playing pretty solidly all year. He played pretty solid at the Scottish Open the week before. And I think we had a discussion a few weeks ago about what will be the story of the Ryder Cup. And I said, Brian Harman's going to lead the United States to victory. And he wasn't even near the Ryder Cup team at that point. And now he jumped up and got on.
20th.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, Dawn and
it seems like a very, Glenn, you know this more than we do. He seems like a very likable person, right? Like you don't hear a lot of negative things about him as far as personality too. Like the fiery attitude is great. I think, is that accurate?
Yeah, no, I think he's well liked. I don't, he's just like a good old Southern boy, likes hunting, fishing, playing golf. And I've never heard anybody say anything bad about him. You know, when I say he's fiery, Don and I followed him at during the FedEx Cup up in TPC Boston like 5 years ago. And, you know, it was the first time I really watched him. I'm like, wow, look at this guy. He's like slamming his clubs, kicking his bags. So we're both like, yeah, let's follow this guy. So we followed him for like 6 holes. He's hitting the ball great, missing putts and just going, you know, it was just fire. I was like, I like this guy. You know, he's 5'6" or whatever. I'm sure he's listed at 5'7" or something. I don't know if he's 5'5". The guy, he's a little guy. He can, you know, one for the short guys. You know, he can pump the ball out there. He can control his ball. You saw he missed, I think, what, one putt inside 10 feet all week.
There was a big thing about that, too, where he said he figured out the secret for putting for him, at least, but wouldn't really disclose what it was. His putting numbers were out of this world. I mean, it was crazy. Even the last putt on 18 to kind of close everything out was not an easy putt. It was just, I think it was 10 feet, 8 feet, something like that. And he just, I don't know. He's super impressive on that front. If you can figure that part of the game out and everything else is pretty steady, he's going to do well for a while, you would think.
Yeah. You know,
but he's still a kid. He's 18 months younger than Anthony Kim.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So.
Great.
My dad and I were discussing, you know, it's really good that Brian Harman opened up the discussion of best player without a major by winning this, because, you know, he was obviously running away with that accolade. And, you know, to take himself off that list, I think was actually a really selfless thing for him to do. No, look, Brian Harman played a phenomenal tournament. I'll say it, though. I don't think I've ever had less fun watching a British Open than this. It was not competitive at all. He got out ahead of everyone, but then played the weekend basically just as well as everyone else played the weekend. He just, you know, made a bunch of progress on Thursday and Friday, which to his credit, he played phenomenal golf. But it wasn't interesting because it wasn't competitive. And on top of that, it wasn't interesting because there's nothing interesting about that golf course. Like, what was the thing that they mentioned most about the golf course the entire week? Internal out of bounds. They had to invent a hazard to make the golf course interesting. You know where they don't have to do that? Carnoustie. You know where they don't have to do that? St. Andrews. You know where they don't have to do that? Troon. There are great golf courses where they can play this tournament, but they put these courses that aren't interesting, that are primarily in England, in the rotation, and then they play these bad tournaments and you get uninteresting champions. And I was talking to my dad about it this weekend. Imagine if they only played Augusta once out of every 8 years for the Masters. Like, that's what the British Open is like, where, yeah, sometimes they play St. Andrews, sometimes they play Carnoustie, and then they play all of these, like, terrible places that I really don't care about. And I want to love this tournament. The most fun I've ever had playing golf was playing golf in Scotland. I think the culture around golf is incredible over there. Obviously, the fans are very passionate, and Harmon did forget to thank them when he was on the green, which then the RNA got really mad about, which, like, oh my gosh, get off your high horse. But there are so many great places where they can play this tournament, and they insist on playing it at places like this and getting winners like Brian Harmon and Ben Curtis. And it really, I think, does damage to the brand of what should be a phenomenal tournament. And it's not to take anything away from the tournament Brian Harmon played. He was very clearly the best guy in the field this week, but the course wasn't interesting and the tournament wasn't interesting.
I know this is going to be an unpopular thing for folks to hear, but and I don't want to get political on this podcast by any means, but I think taking Trump's courses out of the mix for some of the stuff does hurt the rotation. I mean, like, whether you love them or not, the golf courses themselves,
Turnberry is an interesting course. Yeah.
Are out of this world, right? Anyone that goes to play in Scotland or any of his courses, for the most part, have nothing but, you know, great things to say about them. It does stink that those courses get taken away when the selection isn't, you know, there's not like 1,000 courses to choose from there that they really could hold a major at. You know, there's a lot of great courses there, but there's, when you look at the options for holding a real major and challenging these guys the way they need to be challenged nowadays, you know, there's probably not that many. And I just think taking those out hurt, right? You don't have that luxury a lot of times, but I don't know, that's not for me to decide. But I was thinking about that the other day too. It does stink to take them out.
I think you're probably right about that, but there's also no obligation for them to make the rotation as big as it is. You know, like, why does it have to be 6 courses or 8 courses or however many it is now that they don't play like Turnberry and a few others anymore? Like, why does it have to be anything more than, I don't know, St. Andrews, Carnoustie, and Troon? Or just like whatever your top three are. Why does it have to be more than that? They don't need to dilute the quality of course and therefore the quality of tournament that they put in front of people just so they can get to all these places. And frankly, like, every tournament that's not the Masters has this problem, but there are certain tournaments like the US Open that I think are better at managing this than the British Open is. And it just, the tournament could be so much better and so much more interesting, or it could be at a place with more history on a more interesting golf course. And I feel like they just didn't do that. And feeling like they didn't do it when they could have given us something better is a shame. I think it came through, and like, this was not a very good tournament to watch, I would say.
I think it was a victim of good weather, right? When Tiger famously hit one driver over 4 days in 2006, the course was brown. We never got the rains. We never got the winds. The protection was sort of taken away from it. But, I mean, it's a historic course. And if you look at the list of winners, you got, like, Walter Hagen, Bobby Jones, Rory McIlroy, Tiger Woods have all won on this golf course. So that's a pretty good pedigree of winners right there. I think it just didn't have that good British Open feel because like I said, the winds didn't kick up. Like, the course was too green. You didn't see many bad bounces. When you give these guys a damn course, most of them are gonna chew it up. But it is funny how so many of these come down to, if only you took away the winner, it would have been a great tournament. Like, so many tournaments where one guy just outplays everybody else, even in the field of, whatever is 144 players or whatever. one person just goes and runs away with it. You got to respect that player for what he did. It does make for boring TV. It does make for a boring tournament. But yeah, I agree with you. It didn't have the feel, but I think that was more weather and course conditions related more than the tournament itself. Rory made a charge. Fleetwood made a charge. Rahm made a charge. They all fell back, but
Tommy Kim made a charge, baby. Oh yeah.
Yep. One of the youngest second place spinners runner ups ever in the Open Championship.
Young Tom Kim, baby.
I do think when it comes down to course selection too, there's a lot more that's involved. Right. There's a lot of politics involved. There's a lot of tourism that's involved. It's not always about the best courses. And to your point of why don't they just pick three? You could say the same thing about the Olympics. You could say same thing about the World Cup. Yep. Like, if you really wanted to put on the best games, you could narrow that down to three countries and continue to go back, and you'd have the best for everybody in the world. But for politics and for money and for all these other ancillary reasons, they end up going to places that can't really sustain an Olympic Games or a World Cup. And you could probably say the same thing about golf to a certain degree. You know, they never go down the route of a total dog track ever for a major. But if you wanted to narrow it down to five courses to always be the best Open, the best PGA, the best British Open, you could do that. It's just, it's financially, there's a bigger windfall, and it's probably better for the game in general to show more of, hey, there's still some great golf out here in, different parts of the country to show whatever. For Scotland, if it just showed those same three, it really wouldn't show how great the country is and what it has to offer for people that are coming over for, the tourist side of it. So I get it. There's a lot that goes involved, but you do run that risk then of not putting on the best product, when it's your time to shine. A little bit of wet, bad weather and a few other things really make a big difference for that. So,
yeah, but there's really no, if say this tournament had been at Carnoustie or St. Andrews, there's no saying that Brian Harman wouldn't have run away with it there.
He absolutely could have, but I think at least when you play it at a place like that, there's more to talk about on the golf course than internal out of bounds.
And the Beatles.
And that was one of my biggest issues is, okay, it was like Tommy Fleetwood is vaguely from around here. There's a member of the club in the tournament. The Beatles are from this area. And, there's internal out of bounds. There's a lot more to talk about at a lot of other golf courses than that.
Yeah.
Two things that I think we ought to talk about two guys who I think at different times in their careers have been probably the best golfer on the planet. And I want to start with Rory McIlroy. In recent major weekends, Rory has putted terribly. He lost 1.4 shots to the field on the greens on Sunday at the 2022 British Open. 2023 US Open lost over a shot on both Saturday and Sunday. 2023 PGA lost shots on Sunday. 2023 Open lost almost two shots to the field on Saturday and then lost shots on Sunday as well. Where does this guy's ability to putt go on the weekend in majors? Like, what is, or sorry, he gained shots on the field. I take that back. He gained shots on the field on Sunday at the British Open, but that is anomalous compared to what he's done recently on major weekends. And basically he only got back what he gave away on Saturday. Glenn, I don't know if you, as like the resident guy who's good at golf in this group, can shed some light on this. A lot of the stuff they were talking about on the broadcast was he's missing everything to the left, but what is going on? I feel like when it's been the last five majors, he does this every time. It's kind of a concerning trend. What is it that we're seeing here? Like, decode this for me.
I wish I could. I'd make a lot of money because I'd call up Rory and give him all the answers.
That's fair.
The game has had a history of great ball strikers who couldn't putt. Greg Norman was a streaky putter. Ben Hogan hated putting. And you got Rory, who, I don't want to I hate being a follower and saying what everybody else is saying, but he just, for some reason, does not putt well on Sunday in a major. And there's no other way. You can't sugarcoat it. I mean, it is what's causing him. I mean, I haven't seen the stats. Does he hit the ball, you know, when he hits a green in regulation, is it farther from the hole on Sundays than it is on Thursday through Saturday? I don't know. I haven't seen those stats. But it's weird. And it can't be nerves, right? This guy's done everything. He's a great player. He's won it all. I just maybe overthinking it. I don't know. But, you know, with me, there's a reason why I have 37 putters in my basement. If the putter's not working, you get another one. Switch it up, Rory. Just try something different. Try a different look. Just look at something different. I mean, I think he's worked with Brad Faxon, or has been over the past few weeks, one of the greatest putters of all time.
Yeah.
He's doing everything he can to try to be better on Sundays at putting. I wish we knew what was happening.
But it's got to be mental at that point, right? It's like anything in sports. If you're a shortstop and you all of a sudden can't make that throw to first and gets in your head, all of a sudden you're Chuck Knoblauch and you can never make that throw to first, right? Like if it's, I know you were second base before you yell at me, Will, but it's like, it's those kind of things that, you know, it becomes such a mental block, right? To a certain degree, you don't go from being one of the best putters in the world for every event and then get to the majors and your stroke is different or whatever. It's just, you're tightening up, or you're stressing out about making everything instead of, you know, getting it close to, like, whatever it is that is not working. It's almost like you need a psychiatrist more than you need a putting coach at that point, right? It's like, what are the steps you take before you actually stroke it to, you know, get it to where you want it to go? So I don't know. I feel like there's so much of the game that's like that, that the mental side of it, especially in golf, because you're on that island. And once you start to get that stigma of, can you win another major? Can you win another major? Is this over for him? Like, can you? And that just compiles up to every time you grab that putter, it's like, shit, there's no way this is going in. As opposed to when you're on top of the world, you think everything's going in. Like that Michael Jordan saying of, man, the basket seems like a big old bucket and I could throw anything up there and it's going to go in. He's got to figure out how to get that back at some point. And that, to me, it's just a mental thing.
It's kind of like, he doesn't need money, so he's chasing history, which maybe, you know, for a guy like it, that's more pressure than money, right? People who chase money, he's chasing history.
Yep.
It's funny that you bring that up, Craig. I had a friend of mine who's a very good player, Division I college player. I was talking to him one time about how he makes a lot of putts and I don't make any putts. And he basically said to me, in so many words, I want the putts to go in more than you do. And like, I'm more confident that they're going to.
Yeah.
And I was like, all right. And you know what? He probably is way more confident that his putts are going in than I am, because I don't remember the last time I stood over a putt and thought it was going in. But it's golf is such a weird game. Someone was writing somewhere the other day, I was reading about how, and it's such a classic thing that people say, when you try harder in golf, you get worse. Yeah. You can't like fire yourself up and then that makes you do better the way it does at times in other sports. And your explanation of Rory's putting on weekends and majors, you know, under pressure to the extent that he feels pressure, I think kind of gets at that a little bit. Like, there's only so much you can do, and then the failure builds on the failure, builds on the failure. And I don't know if anyone's impervious to that, but it feels like if anyone should be, it would be Rory. I don't know, man. It's puzzling.
Yeah, Roger Maltby said it best. I think he said, golf is easy until you care. And I think Rory just cares right now. He cares about winning majors, and it might just be blocking him now.
Yeah. One other multiple time major champion who's been having a rough go of it lately, it's Justin Thomas, who between his last round at the US Open and first round at the British had shot 81 and 82 in consecutive rounds of major championships. And obviously the Thursday at Liverpool was a little bit fluky because of some, you know, funny bunker action, but still, Glenn, to you first, has Justin Thomas played his way off the Ryder Cup team? how much longer can Justin Thomas get by on the pedigree of being Justin Thomas with the quality of golf that he's played on big stages recently?
Justin Thomas is on the Ryder Cup team as long as Justin Thomas wants to be on the Ryder Cup team. I think the only way he's not is if he says, hey, Zach, let's be honest, I'm not playing my best. This event's too important to me. It's too important to the United States players. I'm going to take myself out of it. So it's going to be very interesting to see, you know, how he plays in the FedEx Cup playoffs and if he takes himself out because he has so much respect for the game and the event. You know, it's PGA of America event. You know, he grew up, you know, family in the PGA of America. The only way Justin's not in Rome is if Justin just says, I'm just not playing well enough, take me out.
And I don't know if he thinks it's time. The quote I read the other day was something to the effect, this isn't going to be exact, but he feels like, three quarters of the time, he's still top player in the world. It's just that last quarter of things, you know, he shoots a 10 on a hole, right? Or whatever, however he phrased it. But it's, you know, how do you get rid of those road bumps, right? It's kind of like Spieth went through that too for the longest time, where mm-hmm. it's like, he's got it. And all of a sudden, out of nowhere, he's in the water twice, you know, hitting three out of a bunker or whatever. And then he comes back and makes that magical shot where you're like, man, he's that roller coaster of emotion for 18 holes. I think Thomas is there now. Mm-hmm. The question is though, like, I don't think you can do it mid-season, but is his dad still the only coach that he's got, or is he working with other people, or is it like a combination? Because sometimes, you know, the best coach in the world, you just need to get away and have someone else just kind of get in your ear and be like, all right, let's simplify what's going on here. There's three things that you need to fix. Is it time for that for Justin? I mean, I don't know. I don't know enough about his. I look at his swing and I'm like, man, it still looks great.
Something true. Like what JT said after Thursday or after Friday was, there's not a person on the planet who is going out and shooting 82 and also hitting the quality of shots that he hits. Yeah. Like nobody who can do that goes out and shoots 82. And technically speaking, he's wrong about that because he did go out and shoot 82, but philosophically, he's right about it, right? Like there's nobody who is capable of playing the quality of golf that Justin Thomas is capable of playing that then goes out there and does this. And especially not anyone that does it multiple rounds in a row in majors. So I have to imagine there's some element of just rotten luck to it, as I think there definitely was on Thursday. But man, I think it's just another example of how fickle the game of golf is. And we've all felt it. You can be playing the best you've ever played and get one bad thought in your head or hit one bad shot or whatever it might be and completely lose it. And I don't want to, you know, diagnose him from afar, but it seems like there's basically no one, no matter how good they are, who can escape that.
You've seen he's added two events now. I think he's almost in panic mode, right? He's five mm-hmm. shots out of, or five places out of the FedEx Cup right now. Yeah. He's not even in the playoffs. So I think he's got a little panic going, which is going to be interesting to see how he plays. I think he just last week committed to the 3M this week. Be interesting to see how he plays. But like Craig said, like, I think his dad is still his teacher, because I heard an interview with him. It says dad feels bad. He feels bad. They don't know what's going on. Craig's right. And sometimes you just need another pair of eyes. You just got to do the right thing. Tiger changed coaches, what, five times? And just sometimes you got to switch it up. Rory needs to switch up his putter or his style. Go cross-handed. JT needs another pair of eyes. Just tell him to do something a little bit different just to tweak it. But it's going to be interesting to watch him over the next few weeks, because I feel like he's hitting panic mode now.
And I feel like if we're talking on the big scale of things, Rory just having that issue with putting on, you know, in the majors is one thing. Getting over the ball and not knowing where it's going at any given point at that stage of your career is super frightening. And if that starts to compile and that gets in his head, we saw it happen to Ricky. We saw it happen to Spieth for a while. We saw it happen to a thousand different, like, you know, you, if you don't feel like you can control the ball the way you normally have, man, you go off the rails real quick. So I don't know. I think he's got, whatever he's going to address, he's got to do it soon. And I think the reason he's doing the 3M and some of these others is to keep the faith that he can compete in the Ryder Cup, because as of right now, he shouldn't be on that team, right? Like, and that's horrible to say. I love him as a player and I think he's awesome, but you know, if you're in a slump and the Ryder Cup is a team that needs to exist in the now, right? Not like just over a legacy, because they've tried that before with the US team and it never really seems to work. But when it's worked really well, you take the hottest players on the planet and you put them together on that US team and they're going to get along, you know, they're going to be fine, but you can't have folks that don't pull their weight. And Justin Thomas shouldn't be there to be just there in the singles match on the last day, right? That spot should be going to somebody that's ready to go every match, regardless of who their partner is, ready to, you know, coming in as hot as they possibly can be with all the confidence in the world. Because you just don't want to get on that major stage and be the guy that blows it for not just your team, but for the U.S. and all everything else. Goes like, that stigma will really screw you up. He's better off taking a step back if he's not playing his best, I think. That European team's starting to look better and better, by the way.
Yeah, yeah, if Sepp Straka keeps doing this, come on, man. You want to talk about a guy who's trending in the wrong direction. Datagolf has Justin Thomas down to 62nd in the world, behind such killers as Alexander Bjork and Eric Cole and Mark Hubbard and, you know, Adrian Meronk. It's... Hell, I somehow, and I don't know what kind of credit they're giving to the Champions Tour, Datagolf has Steve Stricker as the 40th best player in the world. I might have just lost all faith in this ranking system, but hey, you know what? Good for them. Sepp Straka, the aforementioned Sepp Straka, is up 30 places to 39th in the world after his major performance. You're right, Craig. And I was looking at the teams today. The European team is looking a lot stronger than I had been giving it credit for. Some of these guys have really kind of shown out recently. Tommy Fleetwood, another strong performance in a major. You know, obviously you anchor a team with Rory and Rahm. That's going to be formidable. I guess one thing that we still don't know is how these teams are going to handle the LIV guys. Mm-hmm. Because so far, Brooks, if the season ended today, Brooks would be automatically on the US team, but there are other guys, DJ, who played terribly in the Open, by the way, if we want to be fair to Justin Thomas, I will also note that DJ played very badly. But Dustin Johnson, Bryson, Patrick Reed, there are guys on that tour who probably have a case, whether it's on legacy or on just the way they've played recently, to be on this team. The captain's pick situation is going to be riveting, especially now that Wyndham Clark and Brian Harman are both making it on points as of right now. So that probably pushes out a couple of guys who... Probably Zach Johnson was feeling like, oh, I won't have to pick these guys if it would be a little controversial, whether it's Max Homa, whether it's Jordan Spieth, because they're going to make it on points. Well, now they're not going to make it on points, maybe, with Brian Harman and Wyndham Clark getting their way in. So, Glenn, how do you think about handling those six captains' picks, given that there are some guys in that top six that we really probably didn't expect to be there?
Yeah, I mean, this is going to be the most interesting year for captain's picks in the, you know, history of the Ryder Cup. Because of this reason, like, what are they going to do? Does Zach take Patrick Reed, right? Because he's not a great, not playing that great, but he's still a bulldog in the Ryder Cup. Does the European team take Poulter? You know, Poulter was never a great player, but he's great at the Ryder Cup. It's going to be interesting to see who gets picked. You know, yeah, Zach's job just got a lot harder. You know, I think we were talking about this a month ago, like, this is easy. I would just go right down the list to 12 and take them all. But I think now you got to look around. I mean, I was really happy to see Cameron Young bounce back. I don't know how.
How good is Cameron Young, man? Despite not making a putt in the entire tournament to play that well, this guy is a killer.
Yeah, he had such a great year last year. I think everyone was expecting big things from him this year. He's, you know, he did not have a great year by his standards, but it was good to see him turn it on now because we need him. We need that this young group of guys to take over at the Ryder Cup. But yeah, it's going to be interesting. That's all I can say. Like, there's so many ways you can go. You can just take the easy way out and take the 12, or you can make some controversial picks and bring Patrick Reed and DJ. Kepka's there on points. But it'll be interesting to see how they handle the live guys. That's the big wild card.
I mean, if you remember after the last Ryder Cup, you know, we talked about the fact that American team is going to be a real good team for a long, long time, right? They were young, they were friendly, they played great together, they were hungry, they looked like they would, you know, walk away with the next couple of Ryder Cups without even blinking an eye. Now all of a sudden, out of that team, DJ's not playing well, Colin's not playing well, you know, Bryson's not playing well, JT's not playing well, you know, to the point where none of them may even make the team itself. Luckily, Fowler's kind of back to where he was, you know, a couple of years ago, and there's a couple of new bright faces, you know, like Cam Young's of the world. But, you know, how quickly does this game change everything? It just, you know, and now going against Fitzpatrick, Hovland, Rahm, you know, Rory, they're a very formidable team. So it's going to be interesting. I hope they don't pull people in though, just for the sake of pulling them in. Like, if you're going to do one or two, I get it, but you can't do all these folks just off their name alone. Cause that's not going to end well. You know, you don't all of a sudden define your game, the Ryder Cup, right? Sometimes some folks are better at formats, but for the most part, it's not a winning formula.
Yeah, there are a lot of guys that are on that 2021 team that are probably that we thought, oh, this team's going to be good for a long time. Like you said, Craig, they're just not going to be there unless they are captain's picks. So
yeah, I mean, you look at it, DJ, Bryson, JT, Harris English, Daniel Berger, we're all on that team. Colin Morikawa hasn't made it on points right now. Finau hasn't made it on points right now. Spieth hasn't made it on points right now. It's, you know, you got obviously Xander, Cantlay, Scotty, but this team could look way, way different and much more different from the 2021 team than we thought it would, which is crazy. And man, I know I've said this probably a million times on this podcast. Can Will Zalatoris catch a break? Because he should have been on both of these teams.
Yep.
And I cannot stand, I think the worst thing in golf potentially is that we have yet to get basically like a true, fully healthy, complete couple years of Will Zalatoris. He is so good and so exciting and would be a terrific addition to this team. And it's an injustice to him, to golf, and to golf fans that he has not gotten to be out there healthy. And I'm mad about it. I'm mad about it.
You know what, though? The best thing in the world for these smaller events is the fact that all these guys aren't playing great, because I bet you see a lot of these folks being like, crap, I got a month and a half, 2 months to get my game back in shape and have a chance at this team. I got to start winning some of these events that were probably not on their radar beginning of the season when they were mapping everything out. So, you know, FedEx Cup be damned, whatever, like whether they make that or not, that's probably secondary of, holy crap, I thought I was a shoe-in to be on the Ryder Cup. Now I'm a fringe or not even in the radar player. I'll get it back, and I'm going to get it back quick. So that's, I think it's good for the 3Ms of the world, right? Just got something.
For sure. Yeah, and it has a much better field than I expected that it would. You know, Tony Finau's there, Cam Young's there, Hideki's there, JT's there. The new hottest player on the planet, Sepp Straka's there, Tagala's there. You know, this is a strong field, relatively speaking, for what you would expect from this tournament. And that's awesome and good for, you know, that tournament for being scheduled when it is and being able to pull in those guys. That's great. I mean, I always felt like it was kind of a coin flip with the Travelers being the week after a major of, is this going to help or hurt it? And I think, you know, it would go different ways for different guys, but I think overall it strengthened the field. And you're right, with both the playoffs and the Ryder Cup coming up, I think this tournament being scheduled when it is a huge boost to them. And that's awesome. I mean, we've talked a lot about how to get more eyes on better quality golf in the non-designated, non-major events. And I think, you know, in this case, we're probably going to get some of that this weekend.
Yeah, traditionally those tournaments the week after a major, not very well attended, but yeah. This one, they got a lot of guys scrambling for Ryder Cup points and FedEx points. Good for 3M.
Absolutely. So I think we got to talk about what's become a pretty big story in the game of golf this week, and that is a little bit of a cheating scandal. So in the Ottawa Open last week, a player named Justin Doden was basically right on the cut line going into the 18th hole, which is a par five. He put a ball in the water, made a seven, asked for his scorecard from his playing partner to like look over it or whatever, erased the seven, wrote a five, signed it, turned it in, and then ultimately, obviously, was found out because that wasn't nearly the sneakiest thing that he could have done. And now is kind of a very big story in the game of golf because, like, what on earth? For a million reasons. I mean, it's much more than just like golf is a game of integrity where you're expected to tell on yourself and this and that. It's just like, how is that the strategy that you pursued here? And he made it so obvious. And I mean, there are a million things you can say about it, but like, Craig, what can you even fathom, like putting yourself in this guy's shoes? What is going on here? I understand playing on a non-major tour, grinding, you know, this is his livelihood on the line, obviously, but I think getting a lengthy suspension from the PGA Tour, which I think we all assume is coming, is a lot worse for your livelihood than missing one cut. You know, not in the position, but I have to imagine that. Like, I'm just so like flabbergasted that this is how this happened.
Yeah, I mean, literally one of the worst crimes of the century, just because how do you think you're not going to get caught? Like, I don't know. If you're going to do something underhanded, you got to do it right. This is not the way to do it. And in all honesty, it's a bad look for everybody, right? Golf has so many silly rules that you can get caught on if you don't understand the rules. This was just blatant cheating, right? This was just literally taking a card, or, you know, racing a number and thinking you're going to get away with that. It's just absurd to me. I don't know the guy for Adam. I do love that he quoted the Bible when he did his apology, you know, asking for forgiveness. I guess that makes a difference, but I don't know. It's such a bad look. In my head, I knew we were talking about this today, and I'm like, how do you compare this to, you know, you're in the NBA and you're flopping, begging for penalties, or you're faking an injury on the, and you know, the NFL level, trying to get a timeout, you don't need a timeout, whatever. And I'm like, you can't even really compare this to anything besides, you know, almost, you know, I don't even know what to compare it to other sports. I mean, it's almost like rigging the scoreboard in a football game to be like, you know, oh, every time we score, we're going to get 8 points and they're going to get six, you know, from their side. It's just, you don't hear about this stuff that often because this is supposed to be a game of integrity, and it's not your local fun match between buddies that you're counting scores up and you're doing whatever. Like, this is a big deal. And the PGA's probably got to draw their line in the sand and say, this is not okay. Right. Like, it just, and he's probably going to get made an example of, you know, I just, it seems crazy that he would even attempt this, to be honest with you.
I don't even know how he did it. Right. If you play in a tournament, a big tournament, you know, whether it's a state amateur or whatever, as you know, the scorecard, you have a scorecard and it has you keep the other one of the other players in your group score. So the scorecard has their score. That's the main one. Then on the bottom, there's a strip of paper with the holes, and you keep your own score just so that at the end of the round, you go to the scorer's table. you tear off the bottom, which is your score. You assign the score for the other player that you, you know, you were keeping score for. And then you sort of put that paper over and you make sure the numbers are right. And then you sign it. The player's already signed it, handed it to you. Now you're double checking your scores and then you hand it to the scorer. At what point do they go like, you know, hey, Bob and Doug McKenzie's over there. And he's like erasing the 18-hole score and like putting, but I don't even know how this happens.
Yeah, so it seems like we don't quite know the logistics, but shout out to Monday Q Info for this. It says at scoring, the player who kept Doden's card confirmed his scores and signed it. Doden then asked for the card, saying he wanted to double check some things. Not thinking anything of it, the player handed the card to Doden and left the scoring area. When he gave it to Doden, the 18th hole showed a 7. Upon seeing Doden's adjusted score at 3 under, the two players approached rules officials. According to sources and tournament operators, the scorecard was pulled showing an erasure had been made and a 5 had been recorded for the last hole. The officials then asked Doden and he said he had made a 5. The rules officials confirmed with the walking score and the players in the group that he had made a 7. So he, I guess after getting his hands on the card by saying he wanted to double check some things, don't know what that would mean, erased the 7, wrote a 5, and then the scores were just like, all right. And then the guy who was keeping his score was like, wait a second, this doesn't make any sense.
Lying about it twice is, I mean,
yeah,
so
he doubled down.
Lying about it when you alter the card itself, and then when you're questioned about it, and you're saying, no, I had a 5, knowing that you had a 7. So it's not a brain fart, right? Where it's just like,
the,
oh, wait,
doubling down is bad. Count,
whatever. Yeah, that's now you're digging this grave so deep that you're just never going to get out of it. I just, dumb. If there's a lot of ways to go down in golf, you know, this should not be one of them. If you're, you know,
all accounts, he's a pretty decent player, right? He's made a lot of professional starts. He's had a lot of high finishes on the Canadian tour. You didn't, this is one of the things, you didn't have to do it, man. It was just one tournament. Is it worth giving up? You'll always be known as a cheater. Like, you know, that haunts, you know, stuff like that haunts Patrick Reed. It haunts Vijay Singh. There's always those whispers in the locker room. So, bonehead move of the year in golf.
Really bad. So my preferred way to go down in the game of golf is just to play awful golf, which I do more frequently than I would like. But, you know, I'd like to check in on your guys' golf games. Glenn, how's it been?
Actually, on the upswing, I'm back to shooting in the 70s.
Okay.
It's dramatic. There's a lot of anger. There's a lot of self-disappointment. But, you know, slow starts. But then I've sort of been able to bring it back. Yeah, it feels good. I've got this, I'm working on a simple move. I call it my Ricky Fowler move, where I just stand over and I turn my chest away from the target. And then I start with my hips and then just turn my whole body through and got power back, accuracy back.
Okay.
It's been decent. So yeah, I'm going to have a strong end of the season.
Love that. Craig, what about for you?
Yeah, I'm playing pretty well. Nothing great. You know, I think the last two rounds I had a 79 and 81 and an 82. So for me, it's pretty good. But we joke about the putting thing, but that's my crux too. My problem has not been getting to the hole. It's, you know, either being too aggressive on birdie putts, cause I'm, you know, I feel like I should be making them, and Wingfoot's pretty unforgiving with those. If you miss it, it's not 2 inches away from the cup. A lot of times it rolls, you know, a good 8 feet past the cup sometimes. But it's so too many bonehead moves on my side, but it's all good. I'm loving it. I mean, anytime I can get, we've had a nice, it was so hot for a while. We had a little break the last week, just some really good golf weather, which has been nice. It's been great to get out there.
Love it.
How about you?
That's what we're here. You know, I don't play a ton of golf, but I was down in South Florida this past week and played this new public Gil Hands course called the Park West Palm, which was awesome, but it was walking only. It was one of the hottest rounds of golf I had ever played. And I mean, the two things about not playing golf often are I don't make birdie putts and I don't get up and down, because, you know, those are the things that takes the longest to knock the rust off. So I shot 84. I made one birdie, felt like I hit the ball well. I was happy with it. Course was cool, but that's kind of where my game is right now. Like I get out there when I can. If I hit the ball well, I'm happy, and, you know, just take what I can get. But it's been good.
I'm with you though. I feel like I don't make enough birdies to make a difference, right? Like I last couple rounds, it's been a ton of pars, but then like the couple holes you screw up, you feel like, oh man, I'm not making enough birdies to make up for the one blow up hole or two blow up holes, whatever it is, you know. That's a big part of my game that I definitely got to work on. I got to figure out, because I'm trying now to do the course management side of it. Stay away from the pin, sure, the middle of the green, you know, but then I end up with par, 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 par. Oh shoot, here's a double because something didn't go right. And those, if those start to compile, your score ends up way worse than, you know, kind of like what Justin was saying.
Yeah.
Before you turn around and you're shooting, you know, for me in the high 80s, and like, holy crap, what just happened? I was playing so well a minute ago. But so I got to figure out how to make more birdies.
Speaking of people who want to make birdies, Craig, where can people get their information about the upcoming One Club Short events, and where are we going to be?
Yeah, so oneclubshort.com has all the information you're going to need for our next event. But in reality, I'll sum it up for you real quick. We're at Edgewood Country Club in Jersey on Monday the 31st. It is going to be a blast. The food is great. The weather actually looks phenomenal. It's supposed to be sunny and 80 degrees up here, not too humid.
Oh.
So if that holds true, we are going to have a hell of a day. Golf course, Kyle and I were out there the other day taking pictures and getting some promo stuff together. And it was just so pure. Greens were fast. It's got some narrow holes, got some long holes, it's got some wide open holes, it's got a little bit of everything, some water. So it'll be a good, fun mix of everything. And they're excited. This is one of the clubs that holds nothing back as far as when they put on events. They really want to show a good time. So the food's going to be out of this world. Plenty of drinks, plenty of prizes. And we picked up a lot of cool new sponsors along the way. So we'll have some little new bells and whistles at this one that we haven't had at others. So it'll be great. Can't wait to see everybody.
Love it. Glenn, any parting shots from you before we wrap up here?
I'm going to go 2-0, Will. Cameron Young will be the 3M champion.
Glenn's hot streak. He knew with Brian Harmon, if you can still get your bets in, it might not be might not be dumb to follow him. All right. So that wraps things up for us on this latest One Club Short podcast. You can keep up with us, as always, as Craig said, at oneclubshort.com for everything you'd want to know about dates, courses, registration, membership. You can keep up with us on Instagram and check out some of those photos of Edgewood he was talking about. We are at One Club Short. You can keep up with us on Twitter, where you're at One Club Short and then the number one. Podcast is available wherever you get your podcast, with video if you are listening on Spotify. And the videos are also available on YouTube, where we are at One Club Short Pod. That does it for this episode. We'll be back same time, same place next week to recap Glenn's second straight correct pick in the 3M Open and also One Club Short at Edgewood. And until then, thanks everyone for listening.
Oh, Will, by the way, I think our Twitter account was hacked because someone was putting in some very nasty comments about me in there. And that was probably, it couldn't have been anybody in this room right now. So if you could have our IT group look at that, that would be great.
Yeah, I'll have them look into that. Yeah, for sure.
Thanks, everyone.